Curtis Sliwa.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of 5, to the tune of Lady Goo Goo Gaga, the telephone song so appropriate to, once again, a battle that is being waged from the White House to the state of Florida. And this time it involves the interpretation or version of a conversation that the president had with the widow of Sergeant Johnson. He was one of four hero Marines who were slain in the line of duty in the country of Niger as they were out searching for ISIS elements. The president, after 12 days of not having dealt with the issue, was calling up the families of all four Marines after the day before claiming, hey, you know, I'm more in tune with these families who have lost their loved ones than was either Barack Obama during his administration, Bush 43, or any previous president. And boy, that just opened up a Pandora's box. So the president reached out to the widow of Sergeant Johnson, whose body was being flown to Miami at that moment. The widow with two children and a third on the way was in a car with the Congresswoman of Florida, Frederica Wilson, and her mother-in-law. And this is how Frederica Wilson originally recalled the conversation that the President Donald Trump had with the widow.
He was almost like joking. He said, well, I guess you knew something to the fact that he knew what he was getting into when he signed up, but I guess it hurts anyway. You know, just matter-of-factly that this is what happens. Anyone who is signing up for military duty is signing up to die. And that's the way we interpreted it. And it was horrible. It was insensitive. It was absolutely crazy and unnecessary. I was livid.
And then the president tweeted out, that's not so, Congresswoman. That's not the way it happened. So the Congresswoman, Frederica Wilson, took to CNN to clarify.
Well, I don't know what kind of proof he could be talking about. I'm not the only person that was in the car. And I have proof, too. This man is a sick man. He's cold-hearted, and he feels no pity or sympathy for anyone. This is a grieving widow who is 6 months pregnant. This is a young woman. She's only 24 years old. She weighs maybe 110 pounds, and she has two other kids, 2 years old and 6 years old. And when she actually hung up the phone, she looked at me and said, he didn't even know his name. Now, that's the worst part.
Then the president took to the actual microphones and to the TV cameras to address that directly this morning.
Didn't say what that congresswoman said. Didn't say it at all. She knows it. And she now is not saying it. I did not say what she said. And I'd like her to make the statement again, because I did not say what she said. I had a very nice conversation with the woman, with the wife, who is sounded like a lovely woman, did not say what the congresswoman said, and most people aren't too surprised to hear that.
What's the proof, Mr. President?
Let her make her statement again, and then you'll find out.
That you said this.
Okay, let her make her statement again, and then you'll find out.
And she did make her statement again, but this time it was a little different.
Well, I didn't hear the whole phone call, but I did hear him say, I'm sure he knew what he was signing up for, and but it still hurts. And I asked them to let me speak with him. And the master sergeant said, no, you can't speak with him. I said, but I want to speak with him, because I was livid when I heard that.
on the line to discuss it. A veteran of the United States Marine Corps has been at the side of President Trump when he was just a candidate out there campaigning across the nation. It's Al Baldessaro, New Hampshire State Representative. Thanks for joining us on the Drive Home at 5 again, Al.
Well, thank you, Curtis. It's always a pleasure. It's a shame what's going on here, because once again, the Democrats are using veterans as political pawns. Okay, this Sergeant Johnson was a warrior. He died under the flag. And here we go again, trying to use this for political purposes, and it's a shame. I've been with Donald Trump. I've been with him on the veterans issues. He's done more for veterans than anyone else. Now, I kind of disagree what he said about other presidents, because I don't think he knows that George Bush Jr. Used to go in, duck into the hospitals, used to go to Dover, he made phone calls. Okay, so I have to correct the mayor. But as far as the caring and, you know, about veterans, I'm sorry, they turn this once again into a political BS.
Well, you know the president as well as anybody. You've spent a lot of personal time with him when you were campaigning with him for the presidency. Al, what do you think motivated him to suddenly criticize previous presidents, Obama, Bush 43, and others, as not being attentive to making calls or sending letters to families who were in grief because they had lost their loved ones in the line of duty? Why do you think he would even go there?
Well, I think because General Kelly was probably in his room, in the office with him, and I'm sure General Kelly told the president that Obama never called him when his son died in battle.
Right, but okay. We do know that presidents do not call every family. Sometimes it's just the letters.
You know, it's tough. I'm the vice chair of the State and Federation Veterans Affairs Committee.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been the former chair. I've been on that committee for 11 years, 22 years Marine. I can't make all the funerals. I tried,
yes.
But you can't be in 2-3 places.
Right.
So I can understand if a president, you know, is tied up or don't get the call. But sometimes I try my damnedest to make it a priority, you know, to go to every veteran that comes home with that flag draped on their casket.
Now, to the more important issue of Sergeant Johnson, his sacrifice, and the other three United States Marines who were on that special assignment to root out ISIS in the country of Niger in Africa. What can you say about their service, you having served as a United States Marine yourself?
Well, I can say that, you know what I mean, we look out for each other. We're prepared to die, you know, for our flag. We'll do whatever the country has called us to do, and, you know, because many have shed blood, and some made the ultimate sacrifice, and we keep them in our memories. We should not use them as political pawns.
Now,
you strike me,
Al, as somebody who generally in the past may have watched Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening football.
No, I love football. I boycotted them because, you know, the last thing I remember my father, Korean War veteran, going into the ground was the flag they took off his casket, okay, and folded it and presented it to my sister because my mother was still in the hospital. So I respect their right to protest, but they lost the message.
So today, okay. when Roger Goodell came out, the commissioner of NFL football, and said that the owners will not be ordering their players to stand at attention for the playing of the national anthem before the start of kickoff game time, that didn't satisfy you at all?
No, not at all. I think he made a big mistake. I think he should have gave them 5 minutes or whatever to do their protests prior. Okay, but they diluted the message when they do it with the national anthem, because people aren't talking about their message. They're talking about their disrespect for the flag and the men that died under that flag or carrying that flag. I ask all your listeners, come to New Hampshire and go into the State House in the Hall of Flags and look at all the bloodstained flags that have been carried in different battles throughout the history of New Hampshire. Okay? And then tell me that, okay, it's okay to protest during the flag. I'm sorry. I disagree.
Well, another unhappy former NFL watcher, Al Baldessaro. You may have remembered early on in the Trump campaign for the presidency, he was side by side with then-candidate Trump all throughout the United States. as a U.S. Marine Corps veteran. And his attitude towards the NFL, we're going to be talking about it later with Russ Salzburg, seems to be very consistent with a lot of former NFL devotees.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel founder Curtis Sliwa.
Really try to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
Got to take you back over a year. Remember, it was in the hot, sweltering days of August of 2016. There was a beautiful young lady from New Howard Beach, Karina Vetrano, who would go out on a regular basis, and she would jog. She would run right through the weeds of Spring Creek Park, which was near her home. And then all of a sudden, on the night of August 2nd, 2016, when she went out again, she didn't come back. And her father, Philip, immediately contacted the police. He and the police searched the park. He found her body. And then it was months and months and months of agony as Philip and his wife and his supporters had to bring information to the public. Oftentimes, they used our show right here on the Drive Home at 5 on WABC to do such. And it was torturous. And then eventually, an arrest was made of a guy named Lewis, who was charged with the crime. Subsequently, his defense team has said, oh, I'm not going to take an insanity plea because I want to attack the DNA matching court and have it thrown out. But the whole question of DNA came up over and over in this case. And there is a positive that has emerged from this because even in the midst of their grief, even in the midst of pursuing justice for their slain daughter, Phil Vetrano and his wife continue to pursue a different form of an investigative tool that was not necessarily available to our law enforcement here. They were precluded from using it, although it was available in other states. On the right line right now, rejoining us is Phil Vetrano. Thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5 again, Phil.
No, thank you, Curtis, because you were instrumental in making this day happen. You went out there. I was live with your show, and people heard, and people spoke. So thank you, Curtis.
Now, explain this new form of DNA investigation that the police department and investigators from the district attorney's office are now permitted to use that have made it a lot easier to solve crimes as a result, unfortunately, of the murder of your daughter, Karina Vetrano.
Yes, it is unfortunate, but this is a positive that came from that. And familiar DNA testing is nothing more than another tool that we gave law enforcement. It is a partial match of someone who's related to a criminal. You must be a criminal to have your DNA in the database. And if you're a criminal, your DNA's in the database. And if you're related to this criminal and there's a partial match, we're going to catch you.
Now, I remember, Phil, when you first came up with this idea, because it's done in other states, there was tremendous blowback from civil libertarians, defense attorneys, others, who even in your time of grief were like vilifying you, like you were going on a witch hunt, you were trying to preclude ordinary investigative tools. How were you able to get around all those lobbyists who were trying to convince our legislators and others that we shouldn't use this?
Well, basically, Curtis, they didn't have a leg to stand on. All they did was complain about it and go up against it, but they either was ignorant of what familiar DNA testing was, or they did not have a way to explain. I will debate anybody that it's against, that against familiar DNA any day, because it does not target individuals. This is what it gives the police, is another investigative tool. It is not racially motivated, has nothing to do with, DNA does not know race. DNA does not know anything other than DNA. So they did not have a leg to stand on. There was a lot of lawyer rhetoric, and they just talk in circles, but they did not make a constructive point. That's why it was voted in 9-2.
Mm. Well, that was because of obviously your hard work, your wife's hard work, and you had dogged determination to face your foes. Is there anything that you want to say to them? Because they continue to criticize this method of DNA research in which they say that it will unjustly take people who have not committed crime and end up putting them in jail. You have the 50,000 powerful watts of sound now. What would you say to those civil libertarians out there?
Totally not true. And anytime any one of them want to debate me on the facts, I'm willing to go on your show and debate them one-on-one.
Well, in fact, that's what I will suggest to many of them, because they send me these texts. They send me these emails. They say, hey, I see you had Mr. Vetrano on. You know, please convey our condolences to him for the loss of his daughter. But he couldn't be more hopelessly wrong on this new form of DNA research. I will reach out to them on behalf of you, Phil, and your wife and your many supporters there who are with you throughout the ordeal. And I will suggest we use this program in which I invite you, Phil, on one side, and any of these civil libertarians on the other side to discuss it in length, and then to allow our own listeners to come up with their own conclusions. That's the least we can do for you and your family, Phil.
That would be perfect, Curtis. Perfect.
All right. And we will continue to be side by side with Phil Vetrano and his wife as they continue to mourn the loss of their daughter, the avid jogger. Hopefully you haven't forgotten already. It was just August 2nd of 2016 in which he was murdered right there in Spring Creek Park viciously. That should be one of those murders that have occurred in the litany of murders in our lifetime, almost like Kitty Genovese back in the 50s, that we just never going to forget. We can't wash it out of our minds. We can never forget that.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
.5 40 as we continue on the drive home at 5 with the classic Sly and the Family Stone song Stand. It's so appropriate because all the mockers, the muckety-mucks, the million-dollar ball players and the union reps and the owners and Goodell convened in a meeting yesterday to try to determine how they would move forward with the controversy hanging over the gridiron. What happens every time the national anthem is played, and then it's kickoff time. Yesterday, Roger Goodell came out, and he was like, he said nothing. He said absolutely jack diddly squat nothing. I will not insult our listeners by playing the mumbo jumbo we said yesterday. And he recognized he really didn't do well. So he came back for a second take, and earlier today, this is what Roger Goodell said about the players and their protests when the national anthem is played.
We believe everyone should stand for the national anthem. That's an important part of our policy. It's also an important part of our game that we all take great pride in. And it's also important for us to honor our flag and to our country. And we think our fans expect us to do that.
Okay, so I'm figuring the big setup is, okay, they don't stand, they're going to get suspended. It's not what he said.
They will state to you, and they have stated to everyone publicly, they are not doing this in any way to be disrespectful to the flag, but they also understand how it's being interpreted, and that's why we're trying to deal with those underlying issues.
So Roger Goodell stopped short of imposing a rule on standing for the playing of the Star-Spangled Banner. He said that just hours ago on the line to discuss it, a fixture of sports for many years, reporting on Channel 9 and Fox 5. Always knew him as wearing a sweater. He's the only guy who wore a sweater. Latrell Sprewell, the former Knick, didn't try to strangle. Russ Salzberg joins us again here on the drive home at 5. Thanks for jumping on board, Russ.
Hey, Curtis, let me just say this before we get into this protest and anthem business. I just love talking. I'm sitting here giggling. I love talking to a guy who speaks my lingo. In 2 minutes, you use Maka, Tookus, Fugazi, Scarol. I mean, nothing gets better than speaking that kind of lingo. So let's proceed.
Well, thank you for your salutations there. But, Russ, I listened to Goodell yesterday. He said nothing. Then today he recognized I got to come back and say something. I thought for sure the owners were going to get tough with the players, but again, they seem to be vacillating. What do you make of all this?
Well, here's the thing, Curtis, and, you know, I think I spoke with you about this a couple of weeks ago. The optics are terrible, okay? But the optics are not the story, the true story. This whole thing, whether you or I or your listeners or viewers or anybody agrees with it or not, the point is, or agrees with Kaepernick or not, and I don't approve of the way it was done. I think they did it the wrong way or he did it the wrong way. This protest was about social injustice. Whether you or I agree with it or not, that was the point of it. President Trump made this move. He moved it from social injustice to patriotism when he made that, you know, get these SOBs, fire them, when he said that in the great state of Alabama, which we know is a state known for social and racial tolerance. So that's where that became. Listen, when they were protesting, before the mass protest, before Trump said that, I don't think you had 8-10 guys around the league protesting. Once the president did it and made his remarks, then there were 200 guys doing it. So the protest now really has become a bleat you to the president, whether you or I, again, approve of it or not. Now, I think the problem with the league is it's hurting the league. And I think the owners want to reason with the players to say it's hurting everybody without forcing them to stand. Because I do believe they believe that they have a right to protest, a peaceful protest, if they want. That's what I think this has come down to.
Do appreciate that. But now let's flip the script on something that is far more important to all of us. Tonight, Yankee Stadium. The Yanks have come back again, do or die. They've knotted up the series. What's your take on tonight's game and obviously what will have to be resolved in Houston?
Well, as I chat with you, Greg Bird just got himself a base hit, and the Yankees have grabbed a 1-0 lead in the bottom of the second inning. It was a 2-out base hit. Having said that, I think the winner of tonight's game wins the series. Why is that? I just think if the Yanks win tonight, even though the series would move to Houston, if the Yankees win tonight, what kind of momentum would they have? First of all, that if they win tonight means they would have beaten Dallas Keuchel, who's just been a Yankee killer. That's that. That would mean they would have to go and win 1 out of 2 in Houston, which it's still a tall order going back to Houston. But this Yankee team, you know, growing up, Curtis, I don't know, what were you, a Met fan, a Yankee fan? You might have even been like me. I grew up initially before a Met fan, a Dodgers fan. What kind of fan were you?
No, Yankee. Cut my veins and arteries. I bleed Yankee pinstripes. I hate the Mets. I hate Met fans. I despise them.
This Yankees team is unlike any other Yankees team I can remember growing up as a kid, and I'm going back to the Yogi and the Mickey and you know, the M&M boys days, to Munson, to Reggie, to Derek and the core four. This group is just a fun bunch. They're just a great mixture of personalities. You know, like I said to somebody the other day, my father, let him rest in peace, is rolling over in his grave thinking that his son is rooting for the Yankees. But this Yankee bunch is so likable. You know, I think the winner of tonight's game moves on. Now, the storyline, what do you think the TV, what do you think Fox is rooting for? You know they're rooting for.
They want another game. They want Verlander on the mound for Houston against the Yanks in a take-all final.
You also want a Yankees-Dodgers final.
Oh, absolutely.
West Coast. But failing that, listen, the reason I'm saying the Dodgers is because the Dodgers are up 3-0. Dodgers aren't losing that series. If Houston should get in, think of it this way, and it certainly would be a good feel-good story for everybody outside of New York, what Houston went through with Hurricane Irma.
Right, but you know some, Russ, the only one who would feel good about that is Comrade Bill de Blasio, who said, constitutionally, believe this nonsense, he couldn't support the Yankees, although if they win the World Series, he'll lead them through the Canyon of Heroes and give them the keys to the city. What a shanda. What a disgrazia. What a fake, phony, fraudulent, fugazi mayor.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
WABCRadio.com.
As we continue here on the Drive Home at 5, how many of you right now are sitting in your car, idling, stuck in traffic, listening to your terrestrial radio, old school radio, and you're just pondering what this congestion is because you're stuck in it day to day? Well, another idea has come down the pipe that's going to make it even more congested, especially when you go south of 59th Street in New York City and you head to the lower part of Manhattan. Because Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutto Cuomo, King Cuomo I, has deemed that he is going to partner up with General Motors. They're going to use their new Bolt cars. And they're going to actually practice in a 5-square-mile area in lower Manhattan, giving the opportunity of the Bolt car to be driven by no driver. That's right, a driverless car. Now, they claim this is all experimental. There'll be an engineer that'll be assigned to the car to make sure that things don't go awry. There's nothing wrong with experimentation, and this may well be the wave of the future. But you would think with all the places in New York State that have less congestion, the second largest state in all of New York is Buffalo. There's Syracuse. There's Albany. There's Utica. There's Rochester. Even nearby Yonkers. Hey, you could get lost in Yonkers up in the hills like the play that was written. But the point being is, there are so many other urban terrains that you could use to test out this technology. But you know what this is. This is Andrew Evilize Cuomo sticking it to his fellow Italian stallion, Comrade Bill de Blasio. Your mayor, not mine. I didn't elect him. And I certainly am not going to elect him for a certain term. That'll be over my dead body. But this is all part of their continuing war of words. Now, you would have thought at some point, if the governor was really serious with GM and the Bolt cars, to experiment in lower Manhattan, he would have picked up the phone in Albany at the executive offices of the governor, would have rang through to Mayor de Blasio, and they would have had a conversation about an idea that the de Blasio administration is saying, hey, wait a second, the idea of computers operating 2,000-pound hunks of metal as Chevy Bolt cars in a congested grid full of motorists and pedestrians is going to give me pause for concern and everyone else pause concern, as it would. And you would think at that point, their surrogates could take over the conversational role. Well, we know that Andrew Evilize Cuomo, the governor, and Mayor de Blasio have had absolutely jack-diddly-squat no conversations on this subject, nor almost any other subjects. And who is being kept hostage as a result of this? We, the taxpayers, who have to fund this. Now, the state is responsible for permits allowing car companies to test autonomous vehicles, driverless vehicles, in New York. And it began accepting applications. And I understand all of that. But to suddenly jam it down the throats of all those who are already congested, back-to-back, belly-to-belly, nut-to-butt, in the lower Manhattan area? And what about the future? If, in fact, these autonomous cars, these driverless cars, become the wave of the future, what happens to all the cab drivers out there? Well, whether it's a yellow cab, whether it's one of those lime green, disgusting-looking cabs in the outer boroughs, whether it's Ubers, which now, actually, there are more Uber drivers out there than yellow cab drivers in the five boroughs of the city of New York. And then you have the livery cab drivers and the black car drivers and some gypsy cab drivers out there. What's going to become of them if, in fact, they're no longer driving and taking people from place to place? How are they to earn a living? Are we to put them on the dole? Are we to put them on welfare, give them food stamps, and tell them, hey, you know, you just have to be retrained for a different profession? What profession? So before Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, shoves this test pattern down our throats in lower Manhattan, you think, Andrew Cuomo, you think you could pick up the freaking phone, stop acting like sophomoric juveniles, and actually have an adult conversation with the mayor who's going to have to deal with this, whether it's a disaster, a mess, or it's a success?